games. We got everything you want, honey. We know the names. We are the people that can find whatever you may need. If you got the money, honey, we got your disease in the jungle. Welcome to the jungle. Watch it bring you to your na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na knees, knees. I wanna watch you bleed.
So, greetings out there in internet land, and Kungaloosh to all of you adventurers out there. This is the second half of our podcast with Skippers Benny and Kaz. So a few things here. First of all, we've just moved from where we taped the first half of the podcast, and in the second place, there's a big exhaust fan that I didn't think would be anywhere near as loud in the taping as it is. So chalk that one up to inexperience, and I'm sorry. We edited it down, and it's a lot better than it was. Secondly, we had about a minute that didn't get recorded that we thought was on tape, so here's the setup. We just started a discussion about 9/11 and the way that Disneyland reacted to the attacks, both on an operational and emotional level. And I guess that that really sets it up for episode 2, which I am calling Share and Share Alike, or The Family That Jokes Together Sticks Together.
No, so I mean, that was a strange, obviously a strange experience in a million and one different ways.
Sure.
Because it really, I mean, like, do we want to talk about this or do we want to just have this?
Oh, it's fine. I don't mind talking about it.
Yeah, I just remember that's how I knew something was really wrong, was because my roommate came in and said, hey, this person called from Disney, and it wasn't someone who would normally call about a scheduling thing saying that you don't not to come into work today. And I thought, oh great, I was gonna ask for a day off anyway. And then she said, the resort is closed today. And I went, oh my gosh, what happened? And she said, I think you should come downstairs and watch the news. And so the first tip off that something was really, really wrong, hugely wrong, was the fact that Disneyland was actually closed for the day, which doesn't ever happen. I think the only other time it closed was when JFK died for the remainder of the day. That was it, not even when Walt died.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was an utterly, probably not the direction to take, so I'm just going to slice and kill that whole discussion.
Oh, no, actually, I want to mention something, because I think it's unique to the jungle. I was slated to work jungle that morning on 9/11, early afternoon. I had a class, I was in college at the time, I had a class in the morning, and I was actually preparing to go to school when I got the call from a certain Skipper Rita, who had told me not to come in because the resort was closed. I already knew at this particular moment, because I was watching the news, getting prepared for school as it was. I went to school, wow, no, actually you have to shift this, the story's completely, that was a week after. Sorry, I woke up the morning out to get prepared for work, and I was watching the news, and that's when I got the call from a Skipper Rita. Told me not to come in, and I thought, wow, this is really serious. And rather than staying home with my younger brother, who I did not take him to school that day, I took him with me, and instead of that, what we did was all the skippers got together, and we hung out at a certain Skipper Kelly's apartment, a handful of us that were supposed to work for that particular shift, and we ordered pizza, and we watched the news, because we're also going to school together, so it was what we called ourselves the lunch crew. Really what it was 15 or so of us that also worked the jungle cruise. And so we all met instead of going to school and instead of going to work. And it was because of that that I knew that I had a separate family, I guess, if that makes sense. It was 9/11 that really showed that there was that family there. The jungle cruise kind of transcended just the workspace because it went beyond. And that was true regularly. Every night we were together, whether it was a coffee or some other 21 plus place. Just together, always. I had my family, and then I had the Jungle Cruise family, so 9/11 really solidified that. And then when we came back to work, when we had our moment of silence, it was a very heart-wrenching moment, not only because of what 9/11 was, but also it was the people that surrounded me from the Jungle Cruise when we shut that particular attraction down that was really powerful, standing by the people that I love so much. Also knowing very full well, and I'll be really serious here, that we were on that list perspective list of being attacked, and yet we all decided to show up to work because we had the option of not coming to work for, I believe, up to a month without penalty. So the skippers were one of those locations where everyone showed up every day for one another. Not every location did the same. A lot of people just couldn't be here, understandably so.
And the fact that as skippers, you, while you had to be careful what you said on the boats relating, because there was a scripted joke that goes, oh, where are you from? I'm sorry. Oh, and they say, where are you from? Chicago. I'm sorry? Chicago. No, I said I was sorry. Right. Something along those lines. I think the day after 9/11, someone asked that and the person said New York and everyone just got quiet.
Yeah.
And while you couldn't, there were things you had to be very careful of on stage, backstage, as a lot of skippers dealt with things through humor, yes, we were making tasteless jokes, but it was our way to get through it.
Right.
And everybody that was a skipper understood that and was okay with that.
Yeah.
And was right along making jokes with it, even though we were all desperately crying inside.
Yeah. Well, and that was, I want to say it was Bill Maher who was kind of the first out of the box making the joke about it.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, there was always that question of when is it too quick to do it? And it's whenever it releases something.
Who was that? Gilbert Godfrey? Was he the one who...
Yeah, he did the Aristocrats joke at a roast, and that was what really got everybody kind of back on board.
Yeah,
after
that's what
that.
It was.
And then he goes off with Japan and gets fired from his Aflac job for trying to recapture that lightning in a bottle, apparently. So.
By the same token, what we were talking about before, we moved. The other thing with the Skipper family is that last year, a couple of skippers that we all knew, a lot of us knew from our generation, passed away. And it was basically told through Facebook. That's how it got around. And thank goodness for Facebook. And at that point, it was when I realized that a really large majority of my friend list on Facebook are ex-skippers.
Yeah.
And how many of those people that I still keep in touch with, even though I don't see them all the time, there are some that I still do see quite often. But how many of those people are still near and dear and are still extended family, dysfunctional family.
Sure.
Family you always get along with, but family nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely that bond that really is just very fascinating. And I get comments from people often about how many friends I have on Facebook. And I hate that we're talking about Facebook, but it's the only way that I keep in contact with people through Jungle that I want to be in contact with.
Right.
I mean, it's a great avenue. It's the how you contact me to get this thing going. It's great. And it's fascinating because the same, it's a good majority of those individuals, if they're not from school-related activities like a fraternity, it's really Jungle Cruise skippers. And the funny thing is just the other week, I posted a picture of something that's jungle related. And it was quite funny that the jokes that surrounded was exactly in skipper tone. No one talked about what they were looking at, but everyone talked about what they were looking at through comments, which is brilliant. And it was the handful of people that had no affiliation with Jungle Cruise that were so lost, and what made it funny because they were trying to guess. They didn't know what we were talking about. But it's something that really reflected. It was one of my friends who was not jungle related who had finally stated he was surprised how many Jungle Cruise people were on Facebook, and I thought, you are literally in the middle of a circle of hundreds of us right now. And that was what was funny, is that Facebook has become that space that we can connect, that I can still see who has kids, who's married, who's not, who's this, who's that, who's doing what not. That I'm going to Illinois right now, next week, knowing that I'm still going to be connected in some capacity to everybody, so.
And there's a few yearly, meetups and things that have kind of become ritual.
Sure, sure.
Skipper John's Meat Fest, which really sounds a lot worse when you say it out loud like that.
Barbecue. I will admit, I'm the devout vegan here. I think the only skipper I know, and yet when I see the pictures, I go, I'm so envious, I want to be there.
You can always come.
Meet or no. I know, I always know after the fact.
You can bring some tinfoil.
I think that out of respect, people don't tell me about it. But yet, I also kind of expect a skipper at a dark humor to say to the vegan that he should go see all the dead flesh, and I would be there in a heartbeat.
I
think you're always invited.
Fair enough.
I think you're always invited to that. That, and just in general, all the people that we all worked at, and Jungle Cruise, like some of the smartest, funniest, wittiest people I have ever had the pleasure and privilege to know, and probably will ever have the pleasure of Moomin Show, and some of the most creative. It's amazing how much talent was on that little ride, and how not including, you know, the PhDs and the literal rocket scientists, and Ducko was still a place where everyone could converge, and it's unlike any other attraction in the park. It does have this history to it, and it has, there's something special about it that everybody I know who's ever been a skipper, if they meet someone and they say, oh, you were a skipper? It's like an immediate connection.
Right.
It's so bizarre.
There's not so much the, hey, you worked on Rocket Rocks?
Yeah.
Gosh, that's fantastic.
Right,
no,
right.
No, there is. And it's, it kind of goes back to, you know, to the reaction when we've lost some of our own, or to when there's people who have specific needs. The reaction is huge. I can't think of, it's kind of the reason why we got together to do the podcast is that there is a huge oral history, but there's a huge, almost like a fraternity to it.
Right.
Where, you know, I joke we actually should start, you know, rather than like an order of the elk or order of the, we should do an order of the hippo for two reasons. One is because then we can rent a hall and have it be tax deductible.
And then we can all get fat and it's fine.
But we can also all get medical insurance. That would be a really
good
benefit.
That sounds
good. We can get insurance for being an order of something?
Yes, actually, yeah, some of the fraternities you can actually get cheaper insurance. So I thought that would be a good way to do it.
Sweet, I'm in.
That might be a really interesting way.
We can't get back because we have to save
just
together.
Right.
But it is. It's almost like a fraternity. And when you look at, you know, this kind of goes back to your and my story about going back in the park after the time. There's something about it that elicits an emotional reaction in working there. Because I mean, there is a little bit more of the performer side of it.
Sure.
But we definitely, you know, there's a huge pride to it. There's just all these intangibles that make it a really unique place to have spent time. And I think part of it, as far as the talent level, you're always going to have with any job the people who are there to either cash a paycheck or who are there and just moving through.
Oh, sure.
And then you're going to have the people who, you know, they're going to fit in, they're going to find that being their element. And they're going to get tossed into water and they know they can swim.
The funny thing about Jungle is a lot of people that came there initially just for a paycheck left part of a family.
Sure.
No,
which
absolutely
didn't happen in a lot of other places in the park. Which still wows me to this day. The effect that it could have on people, and the effect that it continues to have on you even after you worked there.
Right.
That have worked there.
Well, and because it was multifaceted, that you had the operational side and the performance side, you had people who maybe had never stood up in front of someone to even, you know, short of being in high school and, you know, doing a play or something. But people who have never had that suddenly were like, I have to do what? You know, as a trainer, I mean, you would know that more. You know, you had people who really clicked with that it was a good extension of their personality.
Oh, yeah.
And the majority of the people who I look at and I stay in touch with and I say that they've got the skipper DNA are those kind of people that you just kind of look at them and go, well, of course they were great at this. Of course this is part of their being because that's just the kind of people that they are.
Well, and I think that a lot of us who maybe hired him when we were younger and not necessarily age-wise, I think even just in relation to knowing ourselves outside of our shell, so to speak, a lot of us enter not knowing that that's our element or not knowing that a microphone or a hand might work. And I've seen a lot of people change drastically because of the Jungle. Those who embrace it in a really, I don't want to say a weird way, but some would say it in a fetishistic weird way. But that's okay.
That's
I mean, I'm the one speaking with the license plate Jungle Skip, JNGLSKP.
So, if you find him, stalk him.
Stalk me, please.
Now, when you leave California, is that being auctioned?
No, I'm keeping that thing.
Keeping it?
I am keeping it. I found a way to register in
Illinois. I remember
when
we were trying to figure out how specifically to spell it when you got that.
Yeah, and I love it. I love it so much. I still have Dr. Skipper. I mean, I use a lot of these different, well, and now that's someone else's, of course, and that's okay. Dr. Skipper can keep it.
Which was his license plate as well.
It was, right. It still is.
Which I always
thought
was
part
of us.
Oh, did you? I didn't know that.
I don't know if the license plate goes with the car.
He might have kept it.
Maybe.
I don't know. But, you know, the other day I had a huge cigar sale getting rid of a lot of my Disney memorabilia, selling it off. Things I've collected over the years from, you know, replica posters from Haunted Mansion, all sorts of just interesting things. And the stuff that I cannot part with are my Jungle Cruise stuff from Imagineering. It's the replica of the entrance poster covered with bamboo to original renderings of Jungle Cruise boats. So just, that's where my heart is. It's that stuff.
For my birthday this past year, I was given one of the coolest things ever. There were pictures that hung in the hotel. Remember the gold frames of the jungle?
I have the Amazon Belle one.
Nice.
No, not of the boat specifically, but it was like of like the jungle block, like a watercolor type rendering.
Sure.
It's not watercolor, I can't, not that first. However, when they were redoing the hotel, some of those went on sale at a cast member thing, and a friend of mine from Burbank bought one for me for my birthday.
Very
so
cool.
I have an actual Jungle Cruise painting that used to hang in the hotel.
That's cool.
And that will be one of my favorite birthday gifts of all time.
Yeah, because your heart's there. It's very fascinating. There's not many jobs that speak in that same capacity. It's neat.
I still, to this day, I'll get hippo things. You know, the people who in the family would know the history of it would just, I found this hippo recipe card holder that was kind of jungle looking.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's sweet, Grandma.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
You know, I like that. It's interesting. I don't want to get all spiritual or whatnot, but partially I will admit the deity that I follow closest is Ganesh, and it's definitely influenced
because
from the Jungle Cruise. Because I was with Ganesh every single freaking day as it is. I mean, every 10 minutes, there was the one I liked, the one who removes obstacles from your life. And as a result, and connected to that, is my obsession with pachyderms. I can't get enough of the elephants.
See, you have the elephants, I have the hippos. Cass, do you have a spirit animal?
There it is.
Penguin.
Penguins. Which,
were...
Exactly.
Right.
Have
we're
seen
completely in the jungle.
The jungle.
Pachyderms is also mine. I was like four. My first stuffed animal was a pink elephant, and I think I still have it in storage somewhere. My first favorite.
So, do you guys have a favorite, either scene and/or joke?
That's a great question.
OG or non-OG? I have a couple other good questions, by the way. Three done. Then we're floating free.
I have a favorite.
I would say
it changed.
You know what? I'll say this. It changed with every boat. The moment you left the dock, you knew what scene was going to be your killer scene at that moment. I left every time when I set off like a thundering herd of chia pets, or whatever the OG script was. My goal was to look at every guest and find the one guest that was unhappy, and my goal was to make them laugh by the end.
Yeah.
And so I tailored my spiel to that one person, knowing everyone else would follow, as long as I really focused on liking that one person in some way. And so it kind of depended. When it came to just general fun, I always, always loved turning down the Nile River in front of Schweitzer Falls, because if there was a boat on the backside of water, my goal was to try to make them break character. I wanted to make them laugh. If that was me dancing or shimmying or something, that's why I loved it, because it was also making guests laugh and interacting with skippers and just trying to have fun with the whole jungle. So for
and
me, I
loved
it.
Skipper Burton many years ago also made people laugh quite a bit at the Schweitzer Falls.
Burton. I love it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, and it did change where you'd find something that worked that didn't ever work before. I always used to try to find, you know, like little kids in that 6 to 7 year old range.
Huh?
I just have a conversation with them, you know, and have it be more of a personal thing. And more often than not, that worked. Occasionally, it would be disastrous.
Sure.
I think we all have the disastrous boats. I think the Asian tour groups, I think, were kind of a big difficulty for us, where we'd have an entire group of guys in business suits.
Sure.
For some reason, it
just
would
pop a beer open
suits.
As they left, because they thought that was okay.
Right.
Yeah. Or start smoking on the boat. That was always one that was really...
Hypothetical.
Smoking
on the dead end.
But we had to stop that. That wasn't our behavior. We were enforcing
discipline. There were those people that we said, you have to leave this resort.
Yes,
come,
please, no
smoking
on this
dead end.
On this giant propane
He was
fill.
Talking about Asian tour groups, not us. But
yeah,
way to put that right out there.
Yeah, no, there were no skippers smoking on the boats. That was not the appropriate.
No, not at all.
Are you kidding?
I shouldn't share that story about Sally.
Was it the monks?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites. Can we?
Whoa.
I was just
it,
thinking
please.
About that. Well, I can't share it alone.
I'll just say that we may have had a skipper named Sally. Oh, that's a great way to put it. So
and
there was a skipper named Sally.
One of my other favorite jokes was Sally would talk about the cobras at the Sunken City.
I don't know that one.
And how they would make great belts and purses.
Oh.
And shoes.
Sally had a boat full of non-English speaking religious enthusiasts. We'll call them monks.
not monks like we,
not
the kind of monks that made beer in the abbey, but like
Buddhist monks.
All in orange robes and shaven heads.
Yes. He came around Trader Sam back to the dock.
We must have been.
Yeah. And all we see is Miss Sally
getting the monks prepared to show us some sort of show. He taught them how to...
They run their finger down the side of their face in a wave motion, and they were all going, whoa!
Just like...
They didn't know they were doing share.
He had an entire boat full of Buddhist monks doing share impressions. Hilarious.
Which was fabulous. It's
probably the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
There was not a day in Jungle that I did not laugh my butt off.
Yeah.
Ever.
I had a group who were in the full business suits that would come through, and I don't understand why they would be coming to Disneyland and matching suits, like same shirt, same tie.
Yeah.
And I had almost a full boat, and I, not a peep the entire trip, I would do the spiel exactly as it was, you know, but no reaction, no response. Got into the dock, and as they're coming off, the last two guys off the boat, one turned to the other, said, hey, that guy was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, huh?
There's those boats.
Yeah.
If anything, it shows
you. Yeah, sometimes they appreciate quietly, sometimes they're vocal. You just had to figure it out.
Yeah.
And not let it bring your spiel down. I think that was a lot, that was to the detriment of a lot of people, is if people didn't react immediately, they would get angrier and angrier as they went through the jungle.
Well, they definitely, you had a lot of skippers who would take it personally. I mean, understandably so, it's difficult sometimes because it really hits your ego.
Oh, sure.
And I do remember one particular joke when guests would leave, the skipper, whoever it was, I mean, more than one said it, and they would say things like, make sure to visit our gift shop, Sense of Humor. Pick up a bottle of Sense of Humor. And I always thought about that, because I wanted to turn it back, and I do think that some had a valid point here. I don't think that it's rather a lack of sense of humor. It's just a reflection of some skippers who took it personally, assuming that they were so funny that they somehow deserved a laugh.
And didn't realize a lot of time that the people were enjoying it, they just weren't vocal.
Right. And sometimes enjoyment
is... And that was a big challenge to overcome, too, is to, like you said, find that one person on the boat that wasn't laughing or wasn't enjoying it and try to make them enjoy it, rather than seeing it as a negative thing.
Right.
Kind of try to bring it around positively.
And I don't know about all other skippers, but my spiel was definitely tailored to a wide variety. I incorporated a lot of sound effects, primarily for kids and also those who didn't speak English. And then I also had different types of, I wouldn't say fully topical, but jokes that range in age so that all different people could connect with some sort of joke somewhere along the lines. And then also all together making myself as goofy and as energetic as possible just to get people invested.
Which sometimes it's hard when it's 104 degrees out.
Oh yeah, it takes a lot of work.
You're on your 200th trip of the day or whatnot.
Or raining.
Oh yeah.
Raining was always fine until your socks got wet.
How about October during smoke season with the smoke in the air, the fire season?
Terrible. Yeah. I was working Lincoln at one point where we had like the big Brea fires.
Yeah.
And the sky was black and it was snowing in the park in like September where it was just coming down.
Those are the hard days when you have those types of elements working against you.
Or when someone said monsoon, I remember taking a trip and just about to turn at Schweitzer and it was gray and cloudy, but then out of nowhere a huge lightning flash and then immediate downpour, not even a second to spare. It was literally a monsoon. It was the most bizarre thing ever. But then at that point you and your crew of guests band together against the weather. And you can make light of it that way.
So I guess without going into the specifics, you know, there's a couple, and we all get known for bits. There was something you did. I just want to ask you, do you think that a potential talk show host, hypothetically, who may or may not have been in a Disney movie, may at some point have stolen one of your bits?
No, Pixar specifically.
Pixar movie.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a stolen...
Yeah, they were on the
boat. No, I know for a fact
it
was.
We know for sure it was.
And I wouldn't say it's stolen, because, and this can go on record, it's Disney property. When we work there, they own it. But yes, I will say, and this is where people ask me, A, if they see my joke separate from this particular Pixar film, they say, they'll ask me, did you get it from there? So actually, no, it's the other way around. And I can't fight against Pixar. I can't fight against that, and that's fine. Because frankly, it always goes back to, I know the skippers know, and that's fine by me.
Yep.
If you want proof, I know that there's a YouTube video of me doing this particular joke in 2002, and so there's documentation that it's there. But yeah, it happened frequently. In fact, there are writers for Disney films who come to the Jungle Cruise, and they ride our boats strictly with the intent of finding jokes to put into their films. So you can say that we're on script or not, they look for us for that reason, because they know that it belongs to the company already. It's a free,
even if it's a joke you may or may not have made up on your own, allegedly.
Right, allegedly. Yes. So yes, it has been taken, borrowed from me.
Well, which is pretty awesome. Which is and every time awesome. I see that movie, I think of you.
Yeah.
So, and speaking of that, I'm actually kind of hopeful that there will be at least a good joke or two in the movie that they're going to be hypothetically created with the Tim Allen and Tom Hanks version of the Jungle Cruise. Which I really don't see that as the best casting decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, where's Jerry York?
We'll see, yeah.
Right? Where's all these other people? Where's Tim Allen?
Yeah.
Would not have been my first choice either, but I haven't seen the script, so
yeah,
who knows?
Fair enough.
Yeah, and we'll wait until the final result, because they've done, you know, I think the Guillermo del Toro,
Guillermo
doing
the mansion
movie will
wait
be,
for that.
Yeah, will be pretty stellar, sure. But I think it'll be interesting to see what they do.
We were so excited. He announced that at Comic-Con 2 years ago, and we were so excited about that.
Sure, it's gonna be neat.
So is there a joke you hated? Was there something that whether it was OG or another, that you just, every time someone said it, you winced, or?
There were some that I never used because I just didn't find them funny or with my style.
Maybe that's it. I don't know that there was a joke that made me go, ooh. There were certain skippers who maybe said certain things that I thought that isn't appropriate.
Yeah.
Or maybe they, in my interpretation how they told the joke, I thought was borderline either A, offensive, or B, not legal.
Yeah.
Whether it be
without peppering it with the proper humor to make it benign.
Right. I mean, if you have a joke that's somehow maybe self-deprecating about your life choices and working at whatever, if you end up sounding like a little creepy, we'll say, I don't think that there was a space on the jungle for that. And so it used to be when they would come around, I would hold my breath, hoping I wouldn't get a guest concern as a result, because that was the problem. And I'll say that, being a Jungle Cruise skipper is one thing. When I took on the role of lead, I had to also work against that, of that weird balance of, I still want the space to be the space that it is, I want to be the family it is, but I also need to find a balance with what is accessible and necessary. And
Even before you were in that role, though, I always remember you as being one of the people who would give that feedback very tastefully and very well. I never would say that, you know, if there was something on your mind, that you wouldn't say it, you know, in a way that was good feedback.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you. So,
maybe, that's something. Wait, who are you again? What's Skipper Tommy? What?
I think another thing about Jungle is that even though there were times when you messed around a lot and you did your own things, and there was a line between skippers that did it to where it was truly still appropriate for the park.
Sure.
And people that just thought they were really, really funny and weren't taking the whole attraction in mind.
Yeah.
And most skippers, you would get very territorial about your ride because you loved your ride and you're proud of that attraction and you wanted to make it the best you could be, even if it meant infusing some of yourself. Just, you wanted to do it, but still be part of the attraction, not become the attraction yourself, and that's it.
But it was self-policing on a certain level. I think that's... There was a point where, up until it stopped being as self-policing and there was more of a management role, I think, you know, when someone said something that was just, you know, not the way things should be, there wasn't a shyness about people coming forward later and saying, you know what, that maybe tone that down or say it differently.
Yeah, we definitely watched after each other in that way, which is great. And not only that, I mean, if I got a guest concern, lead or not, from a guest, I would take it upon myself, as anyone else would, to go back to that cast and provide that feedback. We didn't necessarily need to go to management to tattle on people. We didn't do that, because we actually did have a fairly decent environment in which we all built each other up. There wasn't much of cutting each other down. We may have harassed new people for fun, but it was never like, it was never,
like,
it was,
hazing,
yeah.
School.
Yeah.
And then by their underwear with the rhino's horn.
Right, there was that simple stuff.
Yeah, things like that.
But absolutely. It was such an interesting environment. Again, I've never been part of anything where there's not the competition. Right. I think the extent of competition
is so
funny.
Much pride about what you were doing.
And I think it's fascinating. I think that the only competition I ever saw there wasn't competition so much as territory, in that if for instance a certain skipper had a certain joke and someone else told it without quote unquote permission, other skippers would jump in and say, that is not your terrain.
And then there were things, I remember when you left your Get Out song to me, and I tried it once and I went, it's not right.
Fair enough.
It's just not right. It was only right when this person did it.
Yeah, and there's those. And you know, it's interesting because there's not many other spaces, like you just said there, that you have the ability and others would admit, that's not for me. Others would continue to force it, and it just doesn't work. Most of the skippers, I think, were really good at saying, that doesn't work. That's not my style. That's not my thing. That's someone else's joke.
Or really only truly worked with that one person.
Right.
So then I guess the other two kind of final things, we're getting close to our kind of wrapping at that point. Taz, as a trainer, I mean, I think that there was
And Benny,
but I was asking you specifically.
Oh, okay.
There's a reason why it's a gender-related question. Which is basically, I mean, there's a perception that's been around the
table. I may be a chick, but I have balls.
Yes.
That's
that,
true.
That was a perception that
that's
I think
nice.
Everyone had. But if they're hanging off the back of your truck, you can be arrested in whatever state that was.
Oh.
I don't even want to know.
It was a freedom of speech thing with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But no, I guess the question is why female skippers get such a tough reputation. Why are female skippers not funny, really, is the question.
They're not funny.
Some people
ask.
There are
plenty that are. It's part of the problem is perception. I knew one female skipper that was, I think, one of the funniest people and still remains one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. But she would get guests, not necessarily guest concerns, but not always, you know, great reviews from guests because she was very dry. And the times when I tried to do my boat very dry, people would literally come off the boat thinking you were a bitch. And it has to do with gender perceptions. So that was also a challenge to say, okay, can I do a dry spiel and make it appealing? But a lot of times if I acted bubbly and stupid and, you know, Goldie Hawn-y type thing, they ate it up, loved it. And there are many female skippers that are funny, and some that aren't. She's like, there's male skippers that are funny, and some that aren't.
Oh, no, and I was saying it facetiously, obviously.
You gotta remember, too, that Jungle is, I mean, it was a boys' ride, and it was a boys' club, and it is a type of fraternity. Even I admit that I belong to a fraternity, not a fraternity slash sorority, but a fraternity, and it started with men, and there's still going to be that sort of camaraderie, and there's going to be chicks that can kind of hang with that, and chicks that can't. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just wanted to throw it out there, because I actually think it's a big misconception.
I think so, too.
Yeah. One of my favorite guest compliments, and I still own it to this day, was so we used to get, you know, the written compliments from City Hall, and it's one that says, well, there's one that says your boat was just like riding an episode, riding your boat was just like watching an episode of I Love Lucy, and I want to frame that one. But the other one was one of my favorites, was that they said that they had never found a female skipper funny before, and they rode my boat, and it changed their ideas, and now they were going to be more open to other female skippers. And that was like, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So maybe you just needed someone that connected with you and to give yourself a chance.
Sure.
Every little bit. So I guess then the final kind of hopefully good question, just as far as a forum for what's your either favorite celebrity story or favorite, something that you want to throw out there. Like if we're creating an oral history,
sure.
Is there a...
There's 100 stories.
There's a million.
I remember Benny and I were both two of the most excited people on different days when we both had Brian May on our boats and nobody else knew who the hell he was.
Oh my gosh.
That was one of my two star strikes.
I will, yes. I think that's I've got 100 stories of celebrities. In fact, one of my favorite guest compliments is handwritten by Billy Bob Thornton.
I remember that.
And when he was with Laura Dern. And if you hear this, you too, it's me, Benny, when you brought in the two kids for their birthday. I believe it was Harry and Willie, for their names. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that with their kids, but whatever, it doesn't matter.
I think that's still legally their kids' names. So.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's like their public kids, you know what I'm saying?
So.
But anyways, nonetheless,
you
I got that. Yet. The other one was, Brian May. And it's funny because, and he's the lead guitarist, the songwriter, one of the hit songwriters, of course, outside of Freddie Mercury, of Queen. And he came up to the exit, and I was talking to him, and who he was with, his family, with his big rocker curly hair, and I couldn't place it at first. I kept thinking, I know this face, I know him, I know this accent, but I couldn't place it, and I am obsessed with Queen in a really terribly embarrassing way. Like, I will listen to their albums on repeat, and it's fine. I feel like it's a new album every time. I just showed my boyfriend the other night, oh my gosh, you should hear this new album. It's by Queen. It's called Queen 2. It's incredible. It's the conclusion from Queen 1. It's great. So I'm talking forever, and we had a certain skipper named Skipper Brent, who was a rear load, who also was into Queen at the time, and he looked over at me, and he was basically signing to me. He was doing this thing over his head with his hands, like he was putting a crown on. And my immediate response was, I know I'm a queen. That's what I said. And then that's when it clicked, and I slowly turned back to Brian May, who's laughing at me at this point. And he realizes and sees that I realize who it is. And I went completely silent and just started sweating and said, I have to leave. And I ran backstage, and I just started, like, I've never hyperventilated. I went, I met Brian May. And oh wow, that was incredible. Yeah. I've dealt with many celebrities at here and elsewhere. That was the only time, the second time that I got flustered and I guess starstruck. The first time I got starstruck was with someone I didn't expect to be, and it was what's his name from think of Topanga. Topanga, he called her hair. What is that show called?
Boy Meets World.
Is it Boy Meets World?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I turn around and the Savage kid, whatever his name is.
Dan Savage?
No.
Dan Savage. Not Fred Savage. Dan Savage.
Is it Dan Savage?
I think so.
Whatever.
I think he has a column. I think that's...
I don't know. The Savage brother from Boy Meets World. And I kept feeling this tap. I was at Tiki Room. And I was changing the time of the show to the next show. And I kept feeling a tap on my shoulder. And I'm thinking, I'm busy working right now. And I said, can you wait a moment? I'll be right with you. And I kept feeling it's tap, 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 tap. And I'm like, are you freaking serious? And so I finally turn around. I said, yes, can I help you? And I realized who it was. And I literally paused. And I was starstruck in a way that I went, really, with you? In retrospect, I was
really,
almost embarrassed that it was him and not like Tom Hanks. Yeah. He grabbed my hand and patted me. Yeah. It had to be the lesser-known Savage brother. No offense if you hear this. But I turned to him, whoa, ew, there you are, celebrity. Yeah,
so, yeah, my one starstruck was Johnny Depp when he was on my boat, and that was the day before they started filming Pirates 1. Yeah. But he'd been my favorite actor since, you know, Edward Scissorhands, even before. So that was a huge starstruck for me, and I was a little nervous. Brian May was an iffy starstruck. One of my favorites was Hugh Jackman. Mm-hmm. And it was because generally celebrities at Disneyland, they travel with a plaid, with a guest relations person to, you know, keep people off and show them how to get to things without being accosted. And as a cast member, of course, you don't accost anybody. You're just totally cool with them. And they had someone behind them sitting in the center of the boat who I thought was the VIP. So I was very careful not to, you know, I didn't know who it was. And Hugh Jackman and his wife, we just started having the best conversations. And their little kid, I think his name was Oscar, was into this girl named Ariel, who I remember, he's a Disney name. And we just, you know, had the best conversation, and Ariel was older than him, and made fun about him dating an older woman, and his wife apparently is older than Hugh Jackman as well. So we're like high-fiving in the boat, and the plaid juiced me this look, like, what are you doing? And I'm thinking, what, your VIP's behind you, I'm not bothering them. So it was a great boat, they were great people, we got back around. They got off, and then Hugh Jackman runs back with his little kid and goes, he thought you were really funny. Ariel, I'm jealous. Come back in 20 years. And then Skipper G comes up to my boat and went, you, that was Wolverine on your boat. And I was like, what about it? Oh, my God. So it's almost better not realizing who they were.
Yeah.
We had
great
conversations. And they were just two of the most down-to-earth, cool people ever.
See, and mine was X-Men related, because I did the Johnny Depp and Orlando Bloom when they were there for one of the Pirates. They actually got to take them both out. But I think my favorite one, there's two actually, Michael Jackson in the Tiki Room was a very peculiar experience.
Was he wrapped up in the little thingy?
No, it was early morning, it was before park open, and I was doing the checklist, and I suddenly turned around, there's two guys in suits, like security kind of suits, sure. Like, you know, Secret Service kind of guys, and I'm like, what are they doing standing there? And I go out in the queue, and there's suddenly 40 people out there, and that just snuck up on me. And after the show, they had me do just one more show with just Michael and his handlers in the room, all the kids left.
Handlers.
And at the end of it, he tried to want to touch Jose. And how do you say to Michael Jackson, don't touch my Jose?
Right.
I mean, that's a little strange.
That's actually your bird.
It's your part.
Thank you for letting me work here.
But no, the big one was I was coming back from a lunch, and Skipper Joey was the front of the boat, and there was some guest relations and there's some plaids. I didn't even see who it was that was in the boat with them, but I'm like, oh, I'll take the boat. He's like, no, it's fine, you can go, you can just leave. And I'm like, well, you had like five trips in a row. I mean, it's time for you to get out of the boat. And he begrudgingly left, and it was John Stamos and Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, they were always really nice.
And they were great.
Always sweet.
But that first time, he was a little lippy with me. And he was like,
that's because he was used to Skipper's, you could back and forth.
Oh, no, he had a great sense of humor. And he was like, so Skipper, you're going to be funny? Because I'm like, well, funnier than the last season of Full House.
Oh, nice.
So I got out to Schweitzer, and I'm like, you know, am I going to say anything with Rebecca? Because she gorgeous eyes, steel, you know, piercing eyes. I'm like, you know, you have to be a skipper a long time to truly appreciate the danger and mystique we have in the jungle. Just as a little throw. But she came actually back afterwards, and she wrote a guest compliment, but she grabbed my hands and pressed them to her chest like back, like she like held on to me. It was like, you are the best skipper we've ever had, in her beautiful accent. And I remember standing on the dock, and I think my boat started floating away. I think I was
that's
so...
Not, that's not good.
Yeah, that was
allegedly. Kind
of, allegedly it was doing that, so...
I also had one where I was going up to the loading area from Unload, and a plaid was there with their VIP, and they stopped me, and I thought they were stopping me from getting... Yeah. Then I was like, oh, no, I'm just going up to load. They're like, no, you had Meg Ryan on your boat last week. And I was like, oh, yeah, she was awesome. And that was the first time I'd ever seen her laugh getting off a boat. I think the other time she'd come in, she was... preoccupied with stuff,
sure.
Divorce and all that kind of stuff. But and I'd had Dennis Quaid the week before, so I was really close to making a bad joke, and I didn't. But she's like, yeah, you had Meg Ryan on your butt last week. Oh yeah, I did. And I'm like, uh-oh, what did I do? She's like, she loved you. She could not stop talking about you for like 45 minutes. And of course, being in the position that I am, her baby, I'm like, oh really? Oh, that's why her kids were really cute. You know, trying not to say anything. But inside, I was like, yay, Meg Ryan liked my boat. So yeah, if Meg ever listens, thank you very much. And not even a little bit of the laughter you've given me throughout the years, so yeah. Awesome. Yep.
I have another celebrity thing, and there's something I want to make sure we touch on, because
yes,
Kaz is here.
Here.
Sure. First off, celebrity-wise, it was celebrity I don't know, and celebrity is an understatement. It's more a political dignitary, if you will. It was some royalty from a Middle Eastern regional country. I'm not sure where it was. I don't know who the person was. All I know is a very fancy-looking family with a lot of armed security, you know, very armed escort. And so my boat was full of this family. It was, apparently he was a prince and then a princess and then whoever. We didn't see those.
Oh, man.
But I will say that I saw those. I saw those because when they sat down, I had to go through the protocol that I will be shooting a gun with two blank rounds. With weapons on my boat.
Now I remember this.
I have never been more terrified in my life when I was warned that the people on the boat, if I turn around with the gun, that I would be potentially held, you know, in some capacity. Woo! So I went around the jungle, and when I have never sweat, I told the jokes so to spill in a way that I don't think I had humor. I just said, very bland, I'm gonna be shot, today's the day. This is how I go on the jungle cruise, at least it's in the jungle. And I got out to the hippo pool, shot the two rounds, and I remember closing my eyes and holding my breath in a way that I never had to with that gun. I shot the rounds, slowly put the gun back into the holster and turned back around, and every security guard was looking at me with this vengeance, like they were cold. And I've never been more terrified in my life. And I got them back, and I was just covered in sweat. I was never happier to get rid of a boat. I thought, this is too much. This is anxiety that I don't need in my life. I was like, all right, see you later, Prince, whoever you are. I don't know. And the thing I want to definitely touch on real quick, because this is an oral history and I think it's important, is that there was a necklace that was passed around as an artifact of the Jungle Cruise that was passed on to me.
Started with Skipper...
I say this is the problem I'm going to run into. I wish that I had pre-thought about this, but it came down the lines.
Hold on. From you to me. To you from Renee. No, from Mandy.
From Mandy to
Skipper
Renee.
Mandy. Skipper Renee. Who's the first one? It's not Paul. Josh. Skipper Josh owned it initially.
Yes, and it was this little like ivory looking tiki head of some sort that was passed on as an heirloom in the Jungle Cruise. Unfortunately, I don't exactly know where it's at right now.
I don't either, but I want to tell the history up to us.
Yeah.
I actually thought that it was in Skipper Dave's hands.
It's no longer in the jungle?
Well, I don't know.
That's good to know. If we can
actually,
track it down.
Actually, because I want to say Tiffany Davis passed it on to him on her last boat, and I'm about 80% sure.
Well, we could definitely get a hold of Skipper Dave on Facebook.
The history that I know of it was Skipper Josh.
Skipper Josh.
That was a little before my time.
Right.
Skipper Josh passed it to Skipper Renee, mm-hmm. who passed it when they left to Skipper Mandy. Who passed it to Skipper Benny.
Right.
Who passed it to Skipper Kaz. Uh-huh. Who passed it to Skipper Michael. Who passed it to Skipper Tiffany.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Who passed it to allegedly
Skipper
Dave. Skipper
Dave,
yeah.
Possibly. And I thought so. Oh, Skipper Kip had it in there sometimes as well.
Oh, that's right.
Skipper Kip as
right,
well
right,
had
right,
it.
Yeah.
And I think another Skipper Mike might have had it
sure.
as well. So at least that, I mean, that's pretty cool. That was something that was started by the people, not by
right,
the resort.
Right.
So that was a really cool. I was very proud to have been given that when it was passed to my Skipper Ben. We both cried when
uh-huh,
we did it.
It
was during the downtime. We
that's
were sitting
right.
in a boat. We both cried.
I said, this has got to go on to someone else at this point. So I don't know. I just want to make sure that was in there at some point, because maybe if you come across one of those individuals, they can aid in trying to track it down.
Sure. Like a little genealogy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, guys, there's, like I said, the first peoples on my list. You guys were right at the top of people that I thought would be, A, fun to sit down with, because it's always good to reminisce with friends and people that you haven't seen for a while. And thank you hugely. I think this is it's a good start.
Cool.
We'll
thank
see
you.
Where this
thanks
goes
for
from
having
here.
Us.
So,
thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that's it for episode 2. Just a reminder that although eventually I'd like to go weekly with this lovely podcast, right now we are still producing content. So definitely an episode will go up on September 16th, and we'll try to get one out to all of you internet adventurers before then. If you know of any skippers who might want to sit down with us, particularly ones from the early days of Jungle, up until about the late 90s, well, we have a spiffy new email address for you to email to. It's junglecrews, that's C-R-E-W-S, at gmail.com. Also, if you want to enter any Skipper Dan captions, but you don't have photo editing software, you can send us your pithy quotes or fun jungle jokes, and we'll stick them into a Skipper Dan comic for you. Well, that's it for now, so we're signing off from the Adventurer's Lounge. This is Skipper Kyle and Kungaloosh.